We are back for another season of From the Booth, a podcast hosted by the International Cinema Program at BYU. I'm Chip Oskerson, co-director of International Cinema, here along with fellow co-director Mark Yamada.
Happy to be here.
We're at the end of the summer, and we've been hard at work putting together the International Cinema Program for this fall. On the show today, this is the first episode of our fall season. Mark and I will be talking a bit about putting together a program and preview what will be coming your way this fall at International Cinema. A bit later in the show, we'll be joined by Marie-Laure Oskerson, the Assistant Director of International Cinema, who will be previewing some of her favorite picks for the semester. So let's get started. I thought it might be interesting for our listeners to hear a little bit about the process of what goes into putting together a program every semester.
The many months of hard work.
lots of viewing. We preview, of course, all the films before we actually bring them to International Cinema. Usually there's been at least two or three of us on the selection committee that do this. We get recommendations from faculty based on things they're going to be teaching in their classes, things that they've seen, but things that we've seen too.
Combine that with things that we've seen at festivals, things that have a lot of buzz, and kind of bring that all together.
Yeah. So typically we go to two or three festivals a year, not two or three each, that's collectively. And, from that, we pull together things that we think are going to speak to the audience at Brigham Young University. We try to do a balance of classics and contemporary cinema. The advent of streaming has really changed, I think, how we go about picking films, because we want to avoid things that maybe are readily available.
Too accessible. Yeah. At the same time, it seems like there's just so much content out there that, you almost need a curator, right, to kind of help you through it all. And I think, and that's kind of one of our roles, right?
That's right. And so as we start looking at all these films that we've seen, we also need to balance the needs of the college in terms of language. We want a diversity of languages. We don't want all of one particular language or one particular tradition. And so it's a kind of a balancing act to get it all right.
And to look at some of the themes that we want to deal with, some of the political issues or social issues that we want to treat with the films that we're showing.
So that's a little bit of about what goes in. It takes us several months, but we're at that point where the program is set. If you want to find the entire program, you can go to our website, ic.byu.edu, and you can download the poster. And the poster will also be available at all screenings of International Cinema, as well as outside the International Cinema office in the JFSB. Well, let's go ahead and do a quick preview of the semester. What we're going to do today is not talk about any one film in depth, but give you a little bit of a sense of what will be coming your way, generally speaking. We're going to give some of our personal recommendations as well of films that spoke to us for some reason, things that really stood out to us. The basic structure of the semester is that every week of the semester, we have four films that will be showing, one documentary and three feature films, as we've done in the past year. We're excited to be able to continue this documentary series and are thankful for the support from the college to make that happen. The first series that we can look at that will be running throughout the semester is international noir. That is, films that in one way or another all engage with this idea of film noir.
Right.
And film noir was a term that was coined in the mid-20th century, talking about films particularly that were influenced by this European expressionism as they kind of got translated into Hollywood. We have films like Double Indemnity, which we're going to be showing the week of September 11th. This is a classic noir by Billy Wilder, who himself is an emigre from Hollywood. You get these characters that are very flawed in a lot of ways, but the term itself has to do with the style. You're not scared to use lots of shadows and darkness, which runs contrary to what the studio style of the time in the 30s and early 40s was, where it was everything was bright lighting, and this was showing a darker and kind of seedier side of modern culture, I think.
Right, a little bit of a cynical worldview.
Absolutely. M is that we'll be following in the next week, and we chose this. This is Fritz Lang's classic film from 1931. It's his first sound film, and it really captures all of the... This is a good European precursor for what we think of as the classic noir. And we wanted to think a little bit about, well, what happens when noir begins to cross these boundaries? Of course, the first boundary it crosses is from Europe to the United States. It gets reworked by Hollywood, and then it gets exported. And we've tried to pick some great examples of what happens when it goes back out with films like Panique, which is a French film from 1946, clearly engaging some of the issues coming out of World War II. But even the greats like Kurosawa, right. makes noir.
Yeah, and we usually associate him with kind of a period piece style. Of course, he's well known for his samurai films. This is a really kind of interesting Kurosawa film. It's one that I think is a little underrated, and he shows that he can really put together a great police procedural. It's about a botched kidnapping. But really interesting, and a lot of, in some ways, connections that you can tie in with Double Indemnity. Mildred Pierce is another film that is kind of in our noir series a little bit.
But, that's right.
Yeah. Interesting look a little bit at post-war culture. I guess Double Indemnity and Mildred Pierce are still kind of interwar films, but there's a little bit of that sense of post-war developments going on in both countries, and issues of class become important, I think, in all three of these films, right?
Yeah.
There's a cynicism, a cynical worldview, as we talked about, but there's a certain kind of socioeconomic element that it seems it comes into a lot of noir that we're going to be looking at.
I think that's exactly right. And one of our last examples we're going to be having for the semester is The Bridge, which is a Danish-Swedish television show. We're going to show the first two episodes. And this is in this vein of Nordic noir, which is absolutely what you're describing here. Socially engaged, yeah. Right? That it's aware of its existence within this world. And the way that it picks up noir is in a very post 9/11 kind of way. That is to say that the whole notion of good and evil gets complicated. It's not, we want to draw this kind of clear line, so to speak, but it's more complicated than the fact. Our characters are not purely one thing or the other. They're right. Always this mixture of both. And you can say it creates a greater realism, but I think it's also the way that we have to think about, the world where, who is the real enemy after 9/11? It's, we want to kind of set up these villains, but the villains we have to, somehow it always comes back and we see the villain in us as well.
Right.
As part of the International Noir series, we're going to be inviting a guest from Michigan State University, Professor Justice Nealon. He, and together with a co-author, wrote a book on global noir, and that's something that we can look forward to on the 20th of November. He's going to be here giving the lecture before the showing of The Bridge.
Yeah.
And so that'll be an event that you can mark your calendars.
That'll be great.
Yeah. So another series that we're going to be running this semester is on diaspora, Chinese diasporas. And why don't you tell us a little bit about this, Mark?
I am really excited for this series because we're going to be looking at films that are made within this kind of Chinese diaspora. Of course, diaspora is this idea of ethnic communities, cultural communities existing outside of kind of the original homeland. And so in the case of China, you have these huge populations of Chinese people outside of mainland China and Australia, Americas, Southeast Asia. And so it's kind of looking at what it means to be Chinese. Is it a geographical distinction? Is it ethnicity? Is it cultural? And so, we often kind of think about, maybe foreigners, even Americans. I think Americans are perceived abroad as kind of being this kind of monolithic, kind of homogenous. We begin to see, I think, through two films we'll be watching this semester, The Farewell by Lulu Wang from 2019, and then Crazy Rich Asians from 2018. Two films that kind of deal with maybe the differences in this larger Chinese diaspora. They both involve Chinese American women who travel to other parts of their kind of Chinese community. And they're both, what's interesting, they're both outsiders in that. And I think as viewers, we're outsiders as well through their perspective, right? And they begin to see kind of the differences that go beyond maybe some of the stereotypes of Asian culture, even though the Crazy Rich Asians is kind of this larger, stereotype, right? I think in some ways that film in particular breaks down some of the ideas of what it, how we see Chinese actors, Asian American actors, Asian actors in film, how we've been kind of conditioned in some ways to see them on film, I think is interesting. And that kind of in some ways relates a little bit to a few films we're going to be showing on Bruce Lee, who is, of course, a martial arts master. And I think in some ways more than his martial arts ability is his kind of screen presence. I think he was more of a star than he was. I'm not a martial arts expert, but from what I understand, I mean, his martial arts was, of course, great, but I think it was more his performance, right? His performer's ability.
Absolutely. And you think about the way that Bruce Lee, how he exported Chinese culture, I mean, Hong Kong culture, more specifically, but he is this important conduit to it working its way into the American imagination.
Right.
And to seeing Asian American men particularly. Right. And it's striking how few outside of martial arts have made it to the big screen at all.
Right, right. And if you see, and we're going to be showing Enter the Dragon, which is a film from the 1970s, and he has such a screen presence, right? That he just kind of commands the screen. And you're not used to seeing Asian American actors in this way. I mean, they're often kind of marginalized, they're often kind of the best friend or the, you know, right. And so it's a different way of kind of looking at, and he really kind of brings that out, I think, through his performance. And also in some ways, the way in which he was viewed as in the Black community, which is kind of an interesting segue into our next series, but the way in which he was viewed as an icon in the Black community, largely because, you know, they had access to his films. I mean, martial arts cinema was cheap. It was, you know, had a lot of play in inner city theaters. And, you know, here's this strong character who we can kind of, a hero who we can get behind, who doesn't look like the policeman who just pulled me over, or the, you know, doesn't look like the man, right?
That's right.
And so this idea of having this kind of transnational appeal is really interesting with him. So
the documentary that we're showing, I Am Bruce Lee, really helped to bring that out to me, to see these connections, because I wasn't aware of the kind of the currency and the cultural imagination that Bruce Lee has for African American communities.
Yeah. So it's interesting to think about that.
So that points us towards one of our next series, which has to do with race. This series is going to be showing, particularly in the week of November 13th to 16th, we have four films: If Beale Street Could Talk by Barry Jenkins, Green Book, which a lot of people recognize as the winner of the Best Picture this last year, Girlhood by Celine Sciamma, French film, and then a documentary, Toni Morrison, The Pieces I Am. And of course, this is very timely. Toni Morrison just barely passed away.
Right.
You know, I'm, of course, very familiar with Toni Morrison as a figure. I don't, you know, teach American literature, but, you know, as an American, I'm aware of who she is.
Yeah.
And still, I was surprised by the depth of her thought that this documentary really helps to bring out, and what she's contributed to thinking about race in America.
Right. And I think in some ways, as we were mentioning, this idea of seeing those of minority races in different ways, and the way they're typically shown, the way maybe Blackness and Black characters are shown on screen, she talks about this idea of the white gaze and how oftentimes Black characters are portrayed through kind of a white perspective or a perspective that's not their own, right?
Right.
And her literature, I think, in many ways was about kind of providing a different perspective on life. I think maybe Hollywood's answer to racism and minority characters is sometimes to kind of put them on a pedestal and to kind of, it's its own kind of dehumanizing way, right?
Yeah.
Of kind of saying, okay, well, you know, you're just kind of this perfect person and we're not going to touch you. And it kind of ignores some of the human elements of their life that are kind of more real and intimate. And I think a film that we're going to be showing, If Beale Street Could Talk, really gets into that idea a little bit.
And contrasts really nicely with Green Book, which I think, you know, can suffer a little bit from that critique, even though it was, you know, clearly very popular and a very well-made film.
Yeah. And that when we want to kind of valorize, you know, Black people and their experience, we often can kind of dehumanize a little bit. And I think Beale Street comes back and says, these are real people. They have real lives. They have this love affair. And it's a little bit more intimate than I think you're usually shown.
Yeah.
Black lives in that way. And so
That strikes me in that particular film, I really like Barry Jenkins as a filmmaker. He also made Moonlight, which got a lot of positive attention a few years ago. But some of the shots from this film are the characters looking directly into the camera.
Yeah.
Right. And in a kind of almost contemplative, it's not an aggressive, you know, kind of, you know, returning of the gaze or anything like that, but it really invites you to see them as full and complete human beings.
Right. You have that really beautiful shot, reverse shot between the two main characters, and I don't know what it is about, but they kind of fill the frame, and there's this kind of, humanizing aspect to it. So
yeah.
I think that's really great, and I think it'll be a nice, it kind of intersects in an interesting way with our discussion of Chinese diaspora, but looking at kind of some of these, maybe taking a different look and how films have attempted to portray, go against, maybe push against the way in which minorities are often presented in film.
Another one of the series that we'll be having this semester coincides with the semester theme for the Kennedy Center, which is Bridges and Walls. And some of the films in this series include films like Icebox, which is kind of a almost ripped from the headlines kind of a story about a migrant who is detained at the border, crossing the southern border into the United States. It's played by the actor who voices Coco.
Right.
You know, it's kind of an interesting point. He's a really, he really shows his acting chops here. It's really, really well done. The Bridge we mentioned earlier, this is also in our noir series, but it's all about the border between Sweden and Denmark and why that border is important and not important, and the bridge that connects these, you know, these two places. Part of the series also includes a week-long commemoration of the coming down of the Berlin Wall, which was 30 years ago. And during that week, this is the week of November 6th to 9th, we have Balloon, which is a German film about a daring escape by balloon, hot air balloon, from East Germany to the West that took place in 1979. Some of you might remember this from a Disney film, Night Crossing, from 1982.
Is it based on the same story?
It's based on the exact same story, and the original, the survivors of this escape attempt have said that they weren't entirely pleased with what Disney did with their story.
I don't know,
maybe one can imagine. This is, you know, they always felt like it's a German story that should be told by Germans,
right.
And this is this is it.
That's
they
what
got
they
got, it,
yeah.
In 2018. Wings of Desire is another one of these, and longtime IC patrons will recognize Wings of Desire as one of the classic films of the late 20th century. It is poetic. It is one of the greatest films ever made, I think I have to say.
And not overstating.
I don't mean to go too far with it, but I think I'm on safe ground this way. It's based in and around the wall as a philosophical concept,
yeah.
And it's well done. And a comedy, Goodbye Lenin, which plays with this resurgence of nostalgia for East Germany that's been kind of an interesting phenomenon in recent years.
Yeah, I like how the films that we're looking at with walls don't kind of simplify this whole idea that we're just trying to escape from oppression, but it kind of looks into, I mean, Icebox doesn't necessarily judge. It doesn't judge either side. It's very humanizing, but it doesn't really kind of take a political stance so much. And some of these other films really aren't, they're kind of showing the idea of borders and boundaries in different ways, in more existential ways, philosophical ways, rather than just the kind of the source of oppression that we need to kind of break out of. So,
yeah, that's right. And I like that if we're thinking about bridges and walls, we need to think about both the problems with walls, the importance of walls,
right.
The way that bridges, you know, kind of work together with walls and maybe even productive ways.
Right.
One of my favorite films, I think, from this series is Gaza. This is a documentary about the Gaza Strip. And what really struck me, I saw this at Sundance this last year, and it is just a very beautiful film. I believe the filmmakers are Irish who made it. And it took them 6 or 7 years to make it. And one of the reasons it took so long is it took a very long time to win the trust of the people. And
right.
So, you know, you have these really striking photography of, you know, of a landscape that is, I can't remember how many million people live in this very small
right.
geographic area. But beyond that, it's the people talking
yeah.
about their experience.
Yeah.
And they said that it took a very long time to get people to talk because, one, they're outsiders and they recognized that. They needed to get their trust. But also there was a sense of, you know, among the people in the Gaza Strip that, well, who would care about what I have to say?
Right.
You know, that why would anyone care about my experience? And yet it's very kind of touching and human. They avoid, I think, the trying to put this within the context of the headlines, you know, which side are you on
right.
here? And instead they want us to think about the Palestinians as people
yeah.
and what it means to live in a place like Gaza.
Yeah, I mean, they're holding weddings and you think they should be kind of preoccupied with some of these more immediate concerns, but they're, you know, they're just going on with their lives, and
yeah.
I think that's great, yeah.
Yeah, they live their whole lives this way. Kind of in the similar vein, another film that we're going to be showing is Midnight Traveler, another documentary, and one that is really touching. It's shot entirely on cell phones, which, you know, don't let that scare you away. It's actually really well done. The reason it's shot on cell phones is because it is the firsthand experience of a migrant family escaping the Taliban in Afghanistan, trying to make their way to Germany and to safety, and the absolute harrowing journey. You know, what does it mean to be a migrant? This puts you kind of, you know, up front and center. He's a filmmaker. He and his wife both actually are filmmakers in Afghanistan. That's what got them in trouble with the Taliban. And as they were making this journey, they were sending these SD cards, you know, to collaborators here in the United States who then subsequently edited these together into a film. We're going to be having one of these editors, the producer of the film, Emily Madavian will be coming on the 6th of November, actually, to speak about this.
Yeah.
And it's for me, this was a really, really touching film. And yeah. It really helped me to understand certain things about the migrant crisis.
Well, there's an immediacy to it, right? And this idea, and it brings up interesting questions of filmmaking, too, and who has control of the process. And they're not really editing their own footage. They're just kind of sending it off to be kind of...
Yeah. How do you make a story out of it?
How do you make a story? Yeah. And so, yeah, no, it's really great.
We also have another special event in connection with Meeting Gorbachev, which is a documentary by none other than Werner Herzog that will be playing the week of October 30th.
We are excited and honored to have Astrid Tumenez to come talk about the film. She is, of course, the new president of Utah Valley University and has actually met Gorbachev and I think maybe 10 or 20 years ago interviewed him. So it'll be great to hear her perspective on him and his life and some of the kind of his, in some ways, maybe his life after being, you know, kind of the political forefront of the 80s and 90s.
Right at this crucial time when the when the wall's coming down and the Soviet Union is breaking up. Well, we have some other series as well that, or better said, themes maybe that run through several weeks. We have Complicated Mothers is a series that will be running the week of September 25th. And in this, we have Mother's Instinct, which is a great Hitchcockian kind of thriller, recent film coming from Belgium. Loveling, a Brazilian film. Mildred Pierce, we mentioned, which is kind of a classic Hollywood film done by Michael Curtis, who did Casablanca. And then a documentary, Disappearance of My Mother, about a famous Italian model from yesteryear who has really interesting things to say about what it means to be a woman and and a mother.
Yeah.
It's actually made by her son, who's a little bit pesky with the camera sometimes. Another series I'm looking forward to is the, I don't know if you want to call it a retrospective exactly, but the work of Hosoda.
Yeah, I like this idea. We've been, I guess this is the first semester we're doing this, but we're focusing on the work of one particular anime director or studio. And so we're looking this semester at the work of Mamoru Hosoda. Of course, our encore film, Mirai, which was a hit last year at International Cinema, will be playing again the first week of the semester. And then we have two other films, Wolf Children, from 2012, and A Girl Who Leapt Through Time from 2006 will be playing as well. So this will be interesting to look at his films and help maybe IC audiences get a sense of him as a director and in some ways how he differs from Miyazaki and
I think
and
yeah, I think
studios,
that's important, you know? Right? A lot of people here in North America, they know Miyazaki and Studio Ghibli, and to see an alternative is a nice compliment to that. And you're teaching a class on anime as well.
Currently teaching a class on anime, so we'll try to integrate that into International Cinema as well, but yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Another week theme series is Memories of War. And I think the headliner, I think you can say to this one, is They Shall Not Grow Old.
Right. Really spectacular film.
Which is by Peter Jackson, of course, of Lord of the Rings fame. What he's done is he's gone in and he's taken this archival footage of World War I and he's restored it. And there's restorations and restorations, right?
I mean,
sometimes a restoration is kind of cleaning up the image a little bit and maybe restoring the colors, you know, back. Well, here, I thought when I first heard about the film, I thought it sounded gimmicky. I'm not a big fan of colorization.
Yeah.
But I have to say, it blew me away, right? To see they've gone back and not just colorized it, but they've made sure to project these things at the correct speed, which you hardly ever see.
Right.
And they've even restored the voices. They've dubbed in voices. Lip readers kind of helped them figure out what they were actually saying.
Yeah, no, I mean, and they went to the villages of the people who are shown in the footage and got relatives to kind of do the voiceovers.
So it's the right dialect.
The right dialect.
That's right.
Yes, you have several different dialects going on. Even sound effects and, you know, this weaponry that, you know, no one has really heard or seen before, seen since, you know, the World War I. They've been able to locate some of these old weapons and use and get sound, right? That they kind of dub over. So really interesting process.
It is. And it makes it incredibly vivid.
It does. It brings it to life.
And even the death of it, right? Even the death and destruction of it, you know, kind of comes to life in a kind of a very poignant way.
Right.
It's a nice commemoration of, you know, 100 years plus now since World War I.
Yeah. I mean, there's this moment where they kind of just appear before you and they've become not these kind of old you know, aspects of footage from, you know, black and white footage from war, but they become these kind of living people, right? Who you can really relate to. And so, yeah, really great film. The Load is another film that week, which I really enjoyed. Enjoy is maybe a strong word, or not maybe an accurate way of characterizing this film. It's a little bit of a bleak film. It takes place during the Serbian crisis in the late 80s of the NATO bombings and some of the ethnic cleansing going on during that time. But really kind of gets into a lot of the residual effects of war. I think Wings gets into that a little bit as well.
Yeah, that's right. And The Unknown Soldier, which is an adaptation of a beloved Finnish novel about the continuation war, about, you know, fighting the Russians in World War II. This lives on in the cultural memory. This is the second time this film has been remade, and this is one of the biggest budget films, you know, ever made in Finland. And it's well done. The first part of the film feels a little bit rah-rah Finland, you know, kind of thing, but it really helps to get at the complicatedness of even these very important, you know, we have these moments in our history where it's easy to remember the heroism and the, you know, the kind of the bold resistance and, you know, standing up for what's right and whatnot, and yet forget the real human cost of this. And I think that it humanizes it in that way and helps us, you know, to remember, you know, what the price that has to be paid to, you know, to maintain the integrity of one's community.
Really rivals Hollywood in its production too. I mean, it's, you know, we don't own all the, you know, the currency on war films, right?
That's right. Hollywood, right? And yet avoid some of the, can I say, gratuitousness of Hollywood, kind of over-the-top productions sometimes. So, well, this is a preview of some of our series. Mark, what are some of the individual films that you're most looking forward to seeing this semester?
You know, on the other side of this kind of this crazy rich Asian kind of boom that we've had recently, there's been a number of films, one of which we're going to be showing this semester, that deal with maybe kind of the other side of this. You know, we kind of think about all Asians as being kind of this part of this new rich culture.
Consumerist culture.
And yet there are these communities and these pockets and these individuals living in East Asia who are kind of marginalized, who are kind of living in poverty and living on kind of the margins of society. And so Shoplifters by director Kore-eda Hirokazu from 2018 is a film that deals with maybe kind of the other side of this and a little bit of the downsizing trend that you see a little bit in Japan these days, of not really kind of going towards the materialism of the 80s and 90s and focusing more on kind of those who live outside of the underclass, right? Those who live outside of this kind of economic miracle that really dominated the discourse of the 80s and 90s. So
yeah, well, Kore-eda is so good at what he does, right? At creating human characters.
He's a very patient filmmaker, I think. And he doesn't push, you know, things to a conclusion, but just kind of allows them a little bit to unfold. So it's a good film in that way.
Good film about families, too, about thinking what a family is and what holds a family together. Yeah, I think you're right to point to that. One of the ones that I'm really looking forward to is Embrace of the Serpent, which is a Colombian film from 2018. And I'm a little bit hard-pressed to say what it's about other than in a really general way. Part of what's really interesting about a film is its really unique structure, in that you have two stories, at least two stories, that are going on, that are overlaid on each other. Two explorers going down to the Amazon in the search of a rare plant. They both befriend the same shaman figure who's the last of his tribe. And the first of these explorers predates the second by several decades. And he says as he meets him, he's sick and he's dying when he first meets the shaman. And one of the things he talks about to the shaman is that he can't dream and he doesn't dream anymore. And this, of course, is really important to the shaman. And so it's the way that these lives intersect. It's a very poetic film. I used that description before.
Yeah.
It's shot in black and white, interestingly enough, but it's just this very gorgeous photography.
I mean, one thing I really liked about this film is that it shows kind of this indigenous culture, not as something that's kind of static and unchanging and, you know, is the same throughout generation, but it also kind of changes with kind of the trends and the globalization, that it kind of merges with this kind of culture that comes in, right? And it doesn't kind of stay its own thing. And so, interesting way of looking. I like this idea of shooting over, you know, decades, right? And kind of seeing these changes develop in interesting ways.
Yeah. How about a documentary? What's one of the standout documentaries for you?
Well, you know, this is one that I didn't think I was going to like as much as I did when I saw it at Sundance last January, but Apollo 11 blew me away when I saw it. There's a little bit of this They Shall Not Grow Old thing here where you're getting kind of this restored footage shown on the big screen, and it just overwhelms you. I mean, it's such a great...
And what footage, too? I mean, yeah. This footage that hasn't been released that was shot on, like, 70mm film, so
right.
It is so bright and vivid still. It's really amazing.
And it avoids this kind of iconic, stereotypical way of showing it, and it shows a little bit more of... kind of the things that are less shown in this whole, you know, operation. And I think, so really great film in that way. We're going to have a guest lecturer from the physics department who is has some connections to the Apollo 11 mission to come talk about that after one of the screenings. That'll be really exciting to see that.
And it's fun to see on the big screen,
oh,
too.
Oh, it's great. Yeah.
I have to confess that I snuck into the 250 of the Kimball Tower to watch a little bit of that on the big screen. And it's
great.
With us today as well is Marilar Oskarsson, who's the Assistant Director for the International Cinema Program. We're glad you can be here.
Me too.
Why don't you tell us about some of the things that are highlights from the semester?
Well, okay, The Encore Weekend is a must. I mean, those are films that were already really well received last semester. Transit is very interesting, very well done by one of our beloved filmmakers. We love him at IC. His name is Christian Petzold. He's German. And it's a 2018 film. It deals with immigration. It deals with a no man's land. Very, very well done film. Lovers in search of identities. Actually, everybody in this film is in search of something in the world of confusion and uncertainty.
It kind of plays with the form too, right? It kind of keeps you guessing a lot of times, and it's not a straightforward narrative, which I think makes it kind of an interesting film.
Absolutely interesting, and a thriller. Will keep you on the edge of your seats. So that's one that made me think, and I appreciate it so much, the way it was acted, and I love it. Another one that I really enjoy, and I could not get through past the first few weeks. There's so many things on the program that I love. Columbus by Kogo Nada. That's a 2017 film. And finally at IC, we are super, super enthusiastic about
it. We shared it at Sundance a couple years ago, but yep. Distribution has been difficult. And
we had to wait patiently. Basically, what I want to say about this film is that it's beautifully framed, and scenes where objects and places tell the story as much as the actors.
It's a lot about space, right? Insofar that there's a focus on architecture and...
Absolutely. Architecture is one of the main characters. So if you like buildings and if you like... It's a beautiful story. So spaces that characters enter and leave, the shots are static, but it shows the architecture. So architecture is telling the story as well.
Very contemplative, too. It kind of invites you to be with the characters and to think about them.
Yeah, and you understand them better in their own space where they evolve, where love stories are happening, and design is just a masterpiece of this film.
Yeah, that's great. What about documentaries? What would you recommend?
This one as well, not going too far into the schedule. We have a series, we've talked about it, on Mother's Instinct. And the documentary for the series is Disappearance of My Mother. It's an Italian documentary from 2019 by Beniamino Barese. And it's about his mother, Benedetta Barzini, who is an iconic Italian supermodel. She was born in 1943. And it's looking at this fantastic, fascinating woman. Just to give you a little window into her personality, she says, "The real me is not photographable." And this is a woman who has been on the screens and illuminating the screens for years. And now she's a woman in rebellion. She is a feminist. She's a Marxist. She teaches as well. She has a sharp criticism against exploitation of the female image by mainly men. And it's interesting because this is her son who is filming this documentary. It's very intimate. It's in their home. It's a lovely relationship between a mother and a son.
But you feel the tension, don't you? Between him trying to capture her on film and her not wanting to be filmed.
Yeah, and at times, you know, she's the mother, so she tells him, just bug off. And other times she's in her dress and she's swirling for him and just so happily doing it. So, yes, it's the disappearance of my mother, but not quite yet.
Well, we welcome you to 250 of the Kimball Tower this semester. There's a lot of great things that are going to be showing. We've just given you a small taste here and pointed to some of those special events that'll be going on. Of course, we have lectures every Wednesday at 5 o'clock in 250 of the Kimball Tower. A lecturer will help contextualize one of the films for the week. In addition to that, we have the International Cinema class, International Cinema Studies ICS 290R, taught the semester by none other than Professor Mark Yamada.
Yes, and there are still seats available, so sign up.
Yeah, it's a great way to motivate yourself maybe to see a few more of these films, but also to get additional contextualization, have the chance to talk with others about the films. We thank you for being part of our discussion today on From the Booth. We hope that you will join us weekly as we preview the films we'll be playing week by week. We'll give you a bit of context for the films and suggest things to look for, but we promise not to give away too much as we give these previews. Each week, we'll also talk about the films from the previous week, and we'll do so unrestrained by spoiler alerts. Our fall season begins officially the 6th of September with our kickoff weekend, when we'll be showing two films, Transit and Mirai, two of the most popular films from last semester. If you'd like to hear the previews of those films, we invite you to go to our episodes from last season, either on your podcast provider or on our website, ic.byu.edu. You can find a list of all the films we'll be showing this semester, as well as an archive of past semesters at ic.byu.edu. From the Booth is produced by the International Cinema Program, who gets its steadfast support from the BYU College of Humanities. We, the hosts of the podcast, are solely responsible for the opinions and ideas expressed here, as they don't represent any official position adopted by the university or its supporting institutions. We thank our sound engineer, Joseph Hegstrom Pratt, as well as the staff of the BYU Humanities Resource Center and Humanities College web team for their help and support. We hope that you have a great semester and that you'll follow us here on From the Booth, and that we'll see you in 250 of the Kimball Tower.
All right. See you next time.
Take care.